the command structure shit, right? That comes into play because we're in a paramilitary organization, but everybody knows when that's applicable, and they follow those rules. And outside of that, I'm just a normal dude. We talk about normal shit. I see people on the street and they do the, "Hey, chief." And it's like, dude, I'm Matt, bro. I'm Matt with my kid, and you're, John with your kid. And let's just talk about how's life and what's going on in your world. 111-110.
Hey guys, welcome to this episode of the Street Cop Training Podcast. I'm your host, founder and CEO of Street Cop Training. My name is Dennis Bonino, and I met Matt recently at SHOT Show with Mark Lamb, ran into him, and it was actually a really nice moment that there were a handful of gentlemen staring at Mark and I, and I said, "Mark, I think they want to take a picture with you." I'll step to the left, and they walked over to me and said, "Can we get a picture with you?" I went, "Oh, I guess the American sheriff didn't fucking get this one,
huh?" That's right.
Too bad, Marky. You watch the real fucking star step over here and take some pictures with some folks.
Dude, and I'm telling you, I never see that. So that was an awesome moment for you, man. You outshone the American sheriff.
Dude, you got to razz him on that shit nonstop, because I'll never let him forget that.
Yep. I got you.
So, dude, tell us who you are and what you're about.
So, Matthew Thomas, I am the chief deputy at the Pinal County Sheriff's Office in Arizona, which equates to being a second in command to the American Sheriff, Mark Lamb. And I've been in this position for 7 years, took the position in 2017 when Mark offered me the job to be his second in command. Previous to that, I was a lieutenant in the agency, and I was running our SWAT team, our narcotics, and our anti-smuggling crews. And I had been part of our SWAT team for about 18 years. And, started as a basic operator, moved my way up, was a team leader, and then ultimately had command of the team at the end as a team commander. Previous to a lieutenant, I was a sergeant for almost 10 years. That included street sergeant. I was a training sergeant. I ran our academy. I stood up our first motor unit. So I was a motor sergeant in traffic. I was an undercover sergeant. And I think that's about it for sergeant. Prior to that, deputy. And as a deputy, same thing. I did uniform. I did traffic. I did drug interdiction, some gang stuff, and did undercover work there as well. And then prior to that, I started the agency in 1993 as a detention officer. So basically started as detention officer, worked my way through the ranks to where I'm at today. Oh, and one important point is I'm recently an author, too, as you found out when we talked in SHOT, wrote a book kind of about the stuff that I did in the cartel, because we deal a lot with cartels down here. And so we did some counter cartel operations, and I published a book back in November kind of detailing the operations and some of the stuff we see with the Mexican cartels.
What's the name of the book? Just do your shameless plug, motherfucker.
It's Interceptors, The Untold Fight Against the Mexican Cartel.
Where can they find the book?
Any of the book platforms, Amazon, Apple Books. They can go to my website, onetimenation.com, and find it there as well.
So why do you think when Mark became the sheriff, he picked you to be second in command?
So I asked that question because I had the same, I was wondering the same thing when he approached me. And I said, how did, because Mark and I didn't know each other. He was a deputy here, and I knew of him. I had one or two small interactions with him. So it wasn't like we were friends or anything like that back before this. So I said, "Hey, how did you get my name?" And essentially what it came down to is two things. Our third in command was his squad sergeant and a good friend of his. And that same sergeant had worked for me for several years in several different assignments, and we were good friends. And so Mark approached him first and said, "Hey, I want you to be my second in command when I win sheriff." And he said, "No, I'm not the guy for that. I'm not built for that yet. And Matt Thomas is your guy." And so that started the ball rolling. And then Mark kind of looked into my background and talked to a bunch of people throughout the county and in law enforcement throughout the state. And he said that just really solidified his decision because I had a good enough reputation amongst the working cops. So that was it. He offered me the position, and I took him up on it because once I met with him and got his values, mission, goals, objectives, I was completely on board.
clearly give us a little insight as to why you were selected, but why do you think that Mark Sargent, who then he put in, who now resides at third in command of the agency, just recommended you so highly? Why do you, outside of the fact that you have certifications and reputation, what else behind it is known about you that they, he almost seamlessly said, this is the guy you want? What did he see in you that maybe a lot of people see in you that, and again, this is the time to, you know, you have a lot of humility. That's fine. You're a good leader. We know that. And the reality is we kind of expose ourselves a little bit with the intention to model why you were chosen.
Yeah. Yeah. And it is, it's tough to talk about yourself because it's a weird thing because you really feel like you're boasting. But I think if I look at it honestly, I've always been just a no bullshit guy. I cut to the chase. I treat people with respect. Bad guys, good guys, coworkers, whatever. So I've always been respectful. My mom kind of raised me to, you know, whether I'm talking to the CEO or the janitor, treat them the same. So I was kind of that guy, and I've done a lot of different jobs, and a lot of it had to do with my inability to stay still for long, right? So every 3 or 4 years, I would have to switch positions, and I would go find some new cool spot to land and do things. So I had done a lot. I had a lot of experience. I was a shit magnet as a cop on the street. And so I got into a lot of things, got through a lot of things. And I think through all of those experiences, when you're doing it with other people, you gain a lot of trust. And I think trust is kind of the biggest thing. They trust that you're going to lead well. They trust that you're doing it for the right reasons. And they trust that you have the right motives for why you want to step into a position like this. So I think all of that kind of culminated into that quick answer for him saying, nope, I'm not the guy. He's the guy, because we had done a lot of work together and he had seen all of those qualities.
Shit magnet's an interesting thing we hear quite often. As a matter of fact, I think I might make a sticker on shit magnet right now. I'm going to put that into the works today. You're not going to be surprised if you see it at the conference.
Right on.
You coming to the conference?
I don't know if I am or not.
You better talk to your boy.
I do have to talk to my boy. Yeah, I have to see if I'm coming or not.
So shit magnet's interesting. It's a phrase that's often coined in law enforcement for somebody who always seems to find themselves in the mix of things. And essentially a translation into a more palatable regard is somebody who goes out and finds crime and trouble. So, right. You know, I love this story. I've told it many times. I actually asked Rich Bruno as with him over the weekend. He's like, I listen to every podcast episode. I'm like, what's some advice you would give me? He's like, well, I kind of can predict what you're going to say when you say it. It's almost like I know exactly where you're going with things. And my response to him was, well, at least I'm consistent and I'm not all over the map. And my beliefs are what they are. Told the story before, but I had a kid reach out to me after class and he was really having a lot of success. And he said, you know, my chief says I'm a shit magnet. He says, I'm always finding trouble. And I said to him back, if you're not finding trouble, what kind of cop are you?
Exactly.
You know what I mean? Like,
yep.
So if you are going through your shift and essentially not finding crime, what kind of cop are you? And I get it. People say, well, you don't work where I work. My administration sucks. I understand. I get that. I'm saying for the people who have the ability to go out and intervene in criminals' plans, mm-hmm. in criminal behavior and activity, and don't, then why are you here? What's your thoughts on that?
I completely agree, dude. And listen, I've been through 5 sheriffs. And so, you know, I've been through administration shifts and I've been through administrations that are less about involving ourselves with criminals and administrations that are all about it. And what I say is that I've always wanted to be known, I think, at the core, no matter what my rank is or any of that stuff, I'm a cop, right? And so whether I'm a deputy or whether I'm a lieutenant or a chief, I'm still a cop. And so I've always wanted to be a good cop. And I think to be a good cop, your role is to be a protector and to make sure that you are fighting evil. And if you're not seeking it out, because it's not going to come find you most of the time, you have to go look for it, and you have to know how to look for it, and you have to understand your enemy, and you have to be involved in that world, and you have to be proactive, and you have to just get after it. So wanting to always be a good cop, I've always went out and I felt like my role was to gear up for the night and go put bad guys in jail. And so that's what I would focus on. And of course, you have your calls for service, but even your calls for service, when I would go to my calls for service, I think the difference between me and most is when I would go into a house, yeah, I'm here for a DV and I'm going to deal with that. But what's up with that blue rag in your room? And I want to know more about that. And I want to know more about who you are and what you're connected to, because it matters to me and it matters to the community. So if I'm there in your house and I have the right to be there without a search warrant, why would I not go further and then find out that you're a gangster and start documenting some of that and get as much as I can out of every call? And I think that's what's lacking a lot is, and you can, like you said, you can blame it on whatever you want, but I was able to work as a good cop and do good street work, no matter who my administration was, because you learn how to work around that stuff and you learn how to maneuver it. That's all part of the game. When you get into government work, you have to learn how to play the games and you have to learn how to maneuver through all that crap.
In your experience of going out and doing good police work and being proactive and having that constant need for adrenaline and being a master of your craft, I think there's an obsession that we all have when we're successful. Did you ever feel any kind of hatred from other people towards your work ethic and work?
Oh yeah. Yeah. Especially lazy people, lazy people don't like hard workers because you outshine them. You make them look bad, right? In their opinion. Even supervisors that were not go-getters or that did not understand the realm that you were getting to, especially, like I said, I loved messing with gangsters and I loved diving into the dope world and putting those people in jail. And if you had supervisors that were not comfortable in those realms, a lot of times they just use the easy answer of no, or they try to cock block you so that you can't do that work, so that they don't have to answer for it, right? And they want the easy job. So you end up with haters for sure. And I think a reaffirming moment for me one time, I was a sergeant and a fellow sergeant had promoted over me. And he and I had kind of been at the same rank throughout our careers. And then he finally promoted over me. He was a lieutenant and then he became my lieutenant. And after about 6 months of working for him, he called me in for my review. And he says, look, man, I gotta tell you something. He says, I was one of your haters. Like, I'd talk shit about you and that you were a golden boy because you seemed to get whatever you wanted. And you were always, in a positive light. And, he said, but I've figured out why, because now that I've had to supervise you, you're the best sergeant I've ever had work for me. And he says, you get shit done. You get it done on time. And he says, not only that, but you're forward thinking and you know what I'm going to ask next. And you get that shit done before I even ask for it. And so he said, I can't ask for a better sergeant. And he said, I'm sorry for all the negative stuff I said over the years behind your back, because it was all wrong. And it was a good moment for me because it reaffirmed that the haters are just that, right? They're hating on you. And you know, the whole phrase, right? You hate me because you ain't me. That's just it, man. When you're doing good shit, everybody either loves you or hates you. And the ones that love you are on board because they're all about the same stuff. The haters are just mad because they can't do what you're doing.
I've had experiences in the field. Obviously, the work that we're doing, it's just needed. It's not controversial. It's just finally somebody saying, hey, things are not good and we've got to make them better. And that rubs people the wrong way a lot. And especially since we actually kind of pull back the curtain on what police work looks like. And then all these men and women who are in this field, especially high ranking or with rank, are like, that's not how I say it. Of course you don't, because you've never seen it before in your life. So you think that writing tickets, rear antenna radar, public contacts and ice cream is police work. But the reality is our cars say law enforcement on them. Our badges say police. There's a reason why it says that. So with that being said, you can imagine there's a lot of pushback when we're constantly holding people accountable for what they've done, how they behave, and their knowledge base when you are a supervisor. Because when you get chevrons or bars or eagles or flowers or whatever the fuck you get on your collar, that is not just something you get to kick your feet up and watch Netflix. It's something that represents, if we have a question, you now need to know the answer. And the cool thing is, what's a relief for everybody who gets chevrons and bars is, with some energy and effort and care and thought, you can actually learn the answers. Some people come to you, they will think you're a magician and you know these things right away. Here's the best part about best leaders. When they don't know the answers, they go, you know what? There's a guy in my squad who does know that better than I do. Yeah. Well, let's ask him. But with that being said, I think of this one time, and there was multiple occasions where I had a gentleman who I was forewarned that he was coming to my class because he was somebody who was doing everything he could to stop this agency, his second in command, from going to my training courses. Now, all his new guys are in it. They're fucking loving him. And he came to a class, and at the end of it, he came up to me and said, you know, I actually have it recorded. I'll never share it, but I have it. I don't need to watch it, but I do have the video, because he didn't realize we were still recording. And he said, you know, I'm one of those guys that literally was talking so much shit about you. And he goes, and we'd have these new guys come in and they're telling us, like, we're looking at their fucking videos. And we're like, you can't do that. Like, yeah, you can. They're handing us case law. We're like yelling at them. And he's like, the crazy shit is, they're right. They're fucking right. We're the fucking assholes. He goes, I'm not even the worst one here. The guy above me, he's the biggest asshole. He goes, but I'm an asshole too. He goes, and we got these kids 3 years on that know better than us. I got fucking 19 on. He goes, they know better than we do. And you know what? You're teaching them to do things the right way. That's how it's supposed to be done. We never knew that. And we got fucking offended when they show up and they're actually right and we're wrong. He goes, I don't want to apologize to you. I go, you don't have to, dude. The ship always has room for people, right? So if you want to jump on board this ship and you see that this being the future of how things are supposed to go, man, we got room on the deck. You know, right. You just got to give it a chance to listen to what we're trying to do and what we're about. People ingest a little grain of salt and they're like, oh, fuck this place. Fuck this guy. So, you know, I couldn't agree more that. Well, let me ask you this. How did you deal with the people who didn't like you or who were talking shit or who were haters?
Man, honestly, this is going to sound very cliche, but I just didn't pay him attention because I was busy working, man. And you know, I just figured, especially, you know, even as a deputy, I remember squad mates that were like, well, dude, you're always tied up on arrest, so you don't take calls for service. And I'd be like, nah, man, I'm taking my calls. And then I'm also getting arrests. And there's times where, yeah, I'm out for a little bit because I'm booking somebody. But I'll jump back in and I'll take extra calls because you covered for me. You know, I'm not that guy. And from that all the way up through the ranks, you know, the haters you would get from different angles. But I just didn't have time for them. And to your point with administrators, like I see at this level, sometimes people get frustrated with us at the line level. And I was talking to my third in command one day and I was like, dude, I don't ever remember, like, as a deputy, I was too busy working. I don't ever remember worrying about what the fucking sheriff was doing or what the chief was doing. Like, I don't ever remember that entering any conversations because I didn't care. I had my world that I was responsible for. That's what I was focused on. I wanted to be good at my craft, and that's what I was focused on. And dude, you know, like many of us, when I first got my in my patrol car and, you know, I got my shiny badge and my gun and I'm a cop all of a sudden on the street, I was like, holy shit, I can't believe they're actually paying me to do this job. This is fantastic, you know? And I think through the ranks, and one of the things I talk to my leaders about is, to your point, is this, that you don't promote to get out of responsibility and to have less authority. And I tell them, every level that you move up, you give up more of yourself. So when you move to sergeant, you give up some of yourself and it becomes more about your squad. When you move up to lieutenant, more of yourself and it's about your sergeants and their squads. And so every level you jump up, it's more and more about others and less about you. And so if you maintain that level of humility and that understanding, I think you serve your people well, because I was granted this position by the grace of God. And my sole function in life is to protect my community and to enable everybody that works at this office to do their job to their best ability and not get in their way when they're trying to do it. And again, to your point, the young cops are freaking phenomenal, dude. There are, and when you sit in a room and you ask for suggestions on stuff, you'll get a 2-month cop that just blows your mind with their recommendations. And you're like, dude, why couldn't I think of that? That is an awesome idea, right? And they have these great ideas and they're seeing it from a different perspective. And we get removed at these levels from the actual street work. And you try to stay connected as you can, but it's difficult. So you have to listen to your line level staff and you have to be engaged with them. And just like your stuff, man, when I met you in Vegas, and you know, I instantly got feedback on my socials when we posted some pictures because the young cops are like, dude, you got to meet him. And so, you know, you can tell what they like, what they're listening to, who they're engaged with. And that's the shit you have to pay attention to as a leader, because what they don't like is the old guy that doesn't know any of this shit, right? You're the boomer in the room.
True shit. You will never hear about people who are doing better than you talking shit about you.
Right.
So, you know, I live this, and being in business, and I think being in life is an interesting roller coaster ride. And I got to tell you, that's very true. And, you know, I, especially now with the kind of notoriety and exposure and unobscurity this company has achieved at this point, and we're not even close to fucking even getting started in my mind. There are other police training companies. It's very, very comical how instead of behaving appropriately, working together with us, are just never even met them, don't know who they are, have no clue, never met any of these people, never took any of their training classes. And every once in a while, like I don't sit around looking at this guy, I have so much stuff to do. But every once in a while, somebody will give me information about something they did. So there was like an email that this other police training put out that said like, they're not associated with us. And I just want to take a moment to thank them, because for the people who didn't know about us, now they're going to know about us. Yeah. So appreciate you on that one. You know, you think you're actually hurting us. What you also did in the same stroke was make the people who love us, but also still liked you, now hate your fucking guts. So congratulations on that too. And this is why playing the hater game never works well. And dude, like we're here with open arms. Like we'll work with any training company that wants to work with us. We have them come to our conferences. I mean, dude, I give so much shit away to them to try to help. And some of them are doing better than I am. And I'm not doing it with any kind of ulterior motive where I'm like, oh yeah, well, I'm going to get something back. I honestly don't give a fuck if you give me anything back. The world is good to me. I've actually had, I was at a class recently and a guy came up and said, hey, you have a problem with the company here? And I went, what are you talking about? He goes, well, so-and-so, so-and-so, and so-and-so. I went, oh, dude, like, listen, man, they do their thing. Like, well, I was in a class with them recently and they just kept talking shit about you the whole time. And I go, if you're going to a class and paying money and your instructor is taking time to talk shit about me, I can guarantee you that there's out of the 50 plus instructors that Street Cop Training has at this moment, as of almost April 1st, 2023, because I don't know what day it is. I've lost track of time. you will not hear our guys talking shit about any other police training company. One, it's forbidden. I do not allow it. If I catch it, you're a fucking dead man. It's like mafia rules, right? You start selling drugs on our turf. It's mafia rules. You're getting whacked. Not having it. It's happened in the past. People have gotten into fucking tiffs back and forth. I'm like, guys, listen, please. Please stop giving these people validation. And let's start worrying about what you're doing to help law enforcement and progressing you and your training forward. Stop looking around, look straight ahead. Because you keep looking around, you're never going to look straight ahead.
Right.
But so I think we all feel it on different levels. And I'd like to give people insight, you know, publicly on what goes on behind the scenes and some of this stuff. And it's actually comical. I actually fucking laugh at it because, dude, I mean, the people that really get to know us know that we're just genuine ass motherfuckers.
Right.
But now you're the second in command. You think that you can feel that people almost are nervous around you or walk on eggshells or intimidated by the second in command, especially a new guy? And how do you make them feel okay about knowing that you're just a regular dude?
By just being a regular dude. But yes, to answer the first question, yes, it is different. It was different immediately, even from lieutenant. You know, as a lieutenant, you feel it a little bit because you got bars. And so that can be intimidating to some or whatever. But I've always just been a regular dude, no matter what position I'm in. Regular dude, meaning I'm approachable. I approach them. I talk about normal stuff. I don't, you know, get into the, like, especially when we're having meetings in my offices, I'm just Matt. That's what my mom named me. And so, you know, when we're here, and I get the command structure of our business, and I believe highly in that, and I respect it. And just like the sheriff, when the sheriff is in public forum and it's not just he and I, he is the sheriff. But when it's just Mark and Matt, he's Mark because he's a friend and we can just talk like dudes. And I do the same thing with, you know, the people that I work with, whether they're leadership or whether they're line level, really doesn't matter to me. I'll just BS with them like normal. And I think to ease that up a little bit is just that, just to be normal, not to try and be in command of them or not. I don't have to tell anybody I'm a chief when I walk into a room. I don't have to announce myself. I don't have to ask for respect for my authority or any of that shit. And just like one of the greatest sayings I like, and it applies to this, is a lion doesn't have to tell the jungle he's a lion. He's a fucking lion wherever he walks. And so it's the same for when you're a command level officer. Everybody knows your rank and they know what that equals. You don't have to flex that shit. And as a matter of fact, if you walk in and you're just a normal dude, they appreciate that a lot more. And I'll give you an example of how we're different, and where I see it most often is at our graduations. The sheriff and I attend graduations for our detention officers and our deputies that are new deputies. And you see a distinct difference in how we congratulate and welcome our cadets compared to everybody else. And it was mentioned to us at a graduation we recently attended. One of the RTOs from another agency told one of his people, he goes, "Watch this. Sheriff Lamb and his command staff actually like embrace their people and welcome them to the family." He says, "We'll just get a handshake and a picture." And so when our cadet walks up and he now is a graduate, it's a big bro handshake and a big bro hug and welcome to the family and glad you're here. And it's just little stuff like that to let them know, like, we're just people, man. We're all human beings here. And, you know, we love you just like you're a brother or a sister, and we treat you normal. And sometimes we have to do the command structure shit, right? That comes into play because we're in a paramilitary organization, but everybody knows when that's applicable, and they follow those rules. And outside of that, I'm just a normal dude. We talk about normal shit. I see people on the street and they do the, "Hey, chief." And it's like, dude, I'm Matt, bro. I'm Matt with my kid, and you're, you know, John with your kid. And let's just talk about how's life and what's going on in your world. And just treat them normal. And I think that goes a long ways, and they understand that this position doesn't define me. Like, you know, I'm just a dude filling a role, and I'm trying to do my best. I make mistakes like them. I openly admit my mistakes. I openly admit my weaknesses because I want them to understand that I'm a human, they're a human, and it's all okay, man. We're going to get through this shit together.
A couple of years ago, I happened to be close to the area where you guys live, attending a police academy graduation. And I was disheartened to see that the sheriff of that police academy did not have time in his schedule to come welcome and congratulate. And he sent somebody from his command staff, like the deputy chief, which was not even the second, like the third command guy, showed up and did his little speech and his ceremony. I went to three police academies, and I often think about how important that ceremony meant to me for my command staff to show up. So what does it make you think about when a sheriff doesn't have time to let his brand new people who just graduated an academy, and a difficult one at that, that he doesn't care enough to be there for their graduation ceremony?
Dude, I can tell you how it feels, because it happened to me when I graduated the academy to become a deputy sheriff. My sheriff didn't show up, and that forever stuck with me. I was like, man, I just accomplished something huge for my life, and I'm jumping into his family, and I would think that he would have the time to you know, show up and at least acknowledge that. So it's a big deal. And I think leaders forget that too. And they get busy with their schedules, and dude, I get it. Cause there's been a couple where the sheriff can't not make it because he has so many conflicting things, but the rest of us all show. And then as soon as he can, the sheriff, when he gets back, is finding that person, apologizing to them for not making it. telling them why he couldn't make it, and going from there. And that's few and far between. We feel like it's a big deal, and it all starts there, right? This is a huge deal for them and their family, and so it's the least we can do to show up. And even like we had a lieutenant just graduate the FBI Academy, and I'm an FBI NA grad, and when I graduated, none of my command staff showed up, and I was a little disheartened at that. And so, you know, when this lieutenant graduated, I told the sheriff, I said, "You have got to be there. It means a lot, man." And I told him, "I'm speaking from my perspective. It means a lot for the sheriff, and if I could have made it, I would have as well, for both of us to be there. But at least the sheriff." And the lieutenant came back and said it was absolutely, it floored him that the sheriff was there. And of course, our sheriff is a rock star. So not only is it good for our lieutenant who graduated, but all the people that are like, "Oh my God, it's, you know, the American sheriff." Our lieutenant was like, "Yeah, that's my boss. That's right." And so, you know, it's a little bit of pride for him too. And the same for our cadets that are graduating the academy. They just, you can tell that it means a lot to them. And we owe them that, dude. We're asking them to essentially come to work for us and possibly forfeit their lives for the work that we're asking them to do. The least we could do is show up for them on their important days.
Hey guys, if you're enjoying the Street Cop Podcast, do us a favor and give us a review on iTunes or Spotify, wherever you're listening to us. Tell a friend. We don't charge anything for the episodes. We appreciate your support. Check us out on any social platform by putting into the search bar Street Cop Training. Give us a follow. We have a lot of free content coming out every single day that you might not catch here on the podcast. And it's important for you to be able to do your job more professionally. And we also entertain you as well. Mark is one of the most unique people I've ever met in my life. And dude, I don't know how a man can make you feel, I even take away the sheriff thing, like he's your best friend in about 14 seconds. And like you have a friend for life. Have you ever met somebody more genuine than Mark Lamb? No bullshit.
No. And that's why people ask why I took this position. And that is one of the biggest driving factors, because when you meet him and you sit down with him, and when I sat down to interview for this position, he was talking for about 5 minutes, and I'm like, dude, I'm all in. To your point, he has that way about him. He is so genuine, so caring. And let me give you an example of how caring this dude is about people. I'm always the first guy at the office, right? I'm the early bird. I get here first. I start knocking stuff out. One time I come in, and I usually get here about 7 a.m. so I can start knocking things out before the 8 o'clock bell rings and everybody else is starting their meetings. So I get here about 7. Mark's already here. And I'm like, dude, what are you doing here? Like, you never get here this early. And he's like, "Oh, I've been here since about 6. And I'm like, "Dude, what the hell?" And he says, "Well, I had to take this kid to work." And I'm like, "What kid?" I'm thinking one of his kids. And he's like, no. He said, "So I met this homeless kid. And, you know, I ran into him at a Taco Bell the other day, and he is trying to get back on his feet, but he didn't have a job." And he says, "So I reached out to some people. I got him a job." He says, "But he didn't have a way to get there." He says, "So I got up at 4:30 this morning. I went and picked him up, took him to work. And then I just decided to come to the office." And I'm like, dude, who does that? Like, and that's just what a good human he is, man. And so it translates throughout everything that he does. And like you said, he's just a genuine person. People are naturally attracted to him because of that. And he genuinely cares. And he has this unique ability that has eluded me my entire life, of meeting you and not only remembering your name, but remembering these little random facts about things that you said in your conversation, because I've seen him come back to people 6 months later, remember their name, which blows my mind, and then say, "Oh, how's your sister doing? She was sick when we talked last." And I'm like, dude, how do you do that? How do you remember that stuff? But that's just who he is and how he is, and what makes him such a great leader and a great person.
A lot of weight on his shoulders. Tough year for Mark, no question about it. And, you know, dude, I feel an extreme amount of empathy and compassion for him and his family. I really do. I can't even quantify or put into words what it must have felt like to go through what he went through. And for people who aren't aware that Mark lost 3 of his family members in a horrific motor vehicle crash, maybe 6 months ago, 7 months ago, something like that. It was an awful, awful thing. And, you know, it's a very hard thing to go through something that traumatic and have a lot of stuff on your shoulders and a lot of responsibilities at the same time. So I don't think people can really understand what it meant to continue to, or to make it through that essentially in some sense, or manage it at the time, but to continue to bear the burden of being in extreme grief, mm-hmm. extreme trauma psychologically, and still show up and hasn't literally deviated from who he is one bit. You know, I don't know how he's doing it, to be quite honest with you. I really don't.
I don't know either. That was a tough period for all of us. And dude, he and his wife were so strong through that whole thing. It's another testament to who he is. And he'll tell you straight up that his faith had a lot to do with that, that that's the foundation that allowed him to get through that as well as he did. They're both doing a lot better now. That was back in December when they lost their son, their granddaughter, and their soon to be daughter-in-law all in one accident.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a lot to process right before Christmas. And you can imagine, you know, the holidays are tough enough, but then you have a loss like that. And again, it's a testament to who he is, man. And the kind of human he is, he's a different breed.
And I do want to apologize for having the timelines incorrect on that.
All good.
I'm just horrible. Like I said before, earlier, I thought today was April 1st, but I think it's, what's today's date? Today's March 28th. I just literally have no clue, dude. Time is a blur for me.
Yeah.
It's very interesting, and I'm trying to do everything I can to try to slow that down.
That's what's going to happen when I retire. It's all going to just whatever. What day is it? What month is it? Who cares?
Pretty much where I'm at now, and I'm not even close to, I'll never retire, but it's neither here nor there. You know, it's interesting you brought up Academy graduation ceremonies, and we had recently attended one, and I said to the people in my staff who'd never been to one, I said, what you're going to see today is a graduation ceremony that 80% of it has nothing to do with the recruits.
Right.
Most of it's going to have to be with tooting people's wieners that are sitting on stage because their friends are hooking them up with accolades and dabs. And then you're going to have a keynote speaker that comes out that nobody wants to hear from, that'll bore the piss out of you, doesn't do any speeches, but has friends and got themselves or their selves or into some place where they consider them to be notable with some notoriety. And boy, I didn't miss. And they said, how'd you know exactly how it was going to go? I go, well, I've been to a few of these. Yeah. I did three myself. And then on top of it, I've attended probably another 10. Why do you think that we do not make police academy graduations about the recruits?
I would say that we do a pretty good job with ours. And it's not ours. It's one that we send our people to, but we send our people to an academy specifically because it aligns with our values. And I think that's a piece what you're describing, because I've been through those as well. Actually, our annual memorial service for fallen officers became exactly that. And you know what, that's like the worst thing you could do for a memorial service. And then they do it with academies as well, where it's what you're talking about. I'd like to recognize so-and-so and then so-and-so and so-and-so. And you're clapping for all these shitheads that you don't give two craps about. And you're like, whatever, whatever, whatever. And you know what the cadets are thinking, because I told you, I ran an academy at one point. And, you know, you would talk to your cadets and all they're hearing is the Charlie Brown teacher the whole time. Wah, 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 wah. They want to get to the, yep, I swear that I'll be a good cop and all that stuff. And then boom, they get their badge pinned and they're out of there. That's what they really care about. And we do a class video too. And everybody seems to like that because it gives the family a little bit of insight into what their family member went through to get to where they're at on stage. So I don't know I don't know why cop ceremonies do the things that they do, where they feel they have to recognize all the politicians and all that stuff. And I'll give you, like, for us, what we did with our memorial, we cut out all that bullshit. And we said, we're not recognizing every politician. We'll basically give one shout out. We'd like to recognize all the dignitaries that showed up and thank you for showing up. Boom. We're moving on to the piece that honors our fallen. And that's where we're going to focus. And I think we do a better job of that as well for our academy stuff, where we focus on here's what they have accomplished and get them through and let's rock and roll, because it is about them. And I think people forget about that and they use it as a day to stand up and toot their own horns and clap for themselves and all their buddies. And it's sad that that happens, and it really shouldn't be. It should be about the people who the recruits that are on that stage that are about to become cops. And for the memorial services, you know, it's about your fallen.
I will never understand why people need their egos stroked. No idea. It does just the opposite for me. So I've been called out and given praise in big events that I didn't know was going to happen. And I'm like, oh my God, I'm really not that cool. Like, please don't fucking, like, you know, I appreciate the gesture, but I'm like, guys, I'm not really anything. I just am using my gifts to make the world a better place, because I want to say on my deathbed that I did something.
Yep.
And on the other hand, I'm just thinking about, like, how insecure are you that you need to make sure your friends acknowledge basically what you've done but really haven't done? And a lot of that can be spoken to, like, who you know to give you some of those positions.
Yeah.
Why is that the psychology behind these fucking weirdos?
Well, and I
think need to get that constant acknowledgement that they're somebody.
I think some of it just, you know, over the years, it became the thing. Like, ceremoniously, you had to make sure you acknowledge everybody so you don't leave somebody out, because you don't want them to be offended that they weren't recognized as being the chief. And like I said, it all goes back to that thing, right? The recognition of who you are and what rank you hold. It's like, dude, everybody knows who you are and what you're about. And especially in the cop world, right? We all know each other. And a lot of times, like, you're sitting in an audience and you're like, phew, that guy's a chief, really? Because, like, I've known him for quite a while. So I think some of it is ceremony, right? They feel obligated when they're having these ceremonies. They feel obligated to recognize those people so they don't offend them or whatever. And then over time, yeah, I think it's the whole ego stroking. And I don't know why people need that, because, again, I really don't walk anywhere and be, because think about it as yourself. You don't walk around and say, like, hey, I'm Chief Thomas. Here's what I've done. Everybody recognize it. You don't need to do that, because you should let, like, your reputation is your reputation. People know who the fuck you are and what you've done.
Oddly enough, when I go out in my personal life, you know, I'll fraternize with people who are in probably, you know, just conversation or whatever it may be. And then out of nowhere, people will be like, well, I'll just have people just randomly approach me, like, hey, can I get a picture? And I'm like, yeah, 100%. And they're like, what are you doing? I'm like, really nothing. All right. And they're just like, really? I'm like, why is that guy want a picture? I'm like, I don't know. It's really neither here nor there. It's not important. Right. So people I don't even know. And I don't ever try to peacock or pretend. And I just, I'll never understand. And I believe I've had moments, Matt, I have, where I'm not so proud of some of the things that I've said. And usually they're tied into anytime I'm ingesting alcohol. This is why I don't do it very often. So I'm just like, why would I fucking say that? So fucking weird. Like, that's so stupid. But since we're on the topic of academies and you ran the academy, this just happens to be, like, really my big focal point in some of the things that I'm trying to implement and change, knowing that this is such a paramount point in people's careers. It's such an opportunity for really great things to happen when we have their attention for 5 or 4 or 6 months. And the crazy thing is, we just thrown it away. Academy class after an academy class, it just keeps getting tossed. And everybody's told the same thing before they go to an academy is, you're going to go to this place, you're not going to learn a thing. And the crazy thing is, nobody's ever been wrong. Nobody's ever been wrong. So since you read an academy, what do you think we're doing right? And what do you think we're doing wrong, in your opinion, at this point? And again, I'm going to politely banter back and forth with you on some of my thoughts and beliefs and feelings. And I think one of the biggest things we're doing wrong is not allowing new progressive ideas to be implemented based on this old world being romantic with the past. That's how we've always done it. That's how I like it. That's how it's supposed to look.
Right.
But we look at a result and we say, I get it. That ceremony was pretty sharp, but you're sending 54 cops out into the street after you had this big opportunity with literally nothing to do this job. How did you fail and miss on 4 to 6 months, but you won on a 6-minute ceremony. I'm just curious. So that's really where a lot of my macro comes from. And I think some of these academies are going to have to relinquish. And it's actually on my to-do list that I'm rewriting the academy programs and giving an example about what it should look like, at least in our thoughts and opinions. And guess what? If you have an idea of what you think we should add into it, send it our way. And we'll have this like almost live Google Doc of let's collect everybody's ideas and pick the best ones. And here's what your new academy program looks like. The problem is getting people to listen and implement. That's what I think the biggest problem is, because we have to submit as human beings that we don't have the answers for everything.
Right.
We might be put in positions where we have to make calls, and we might not be the best person to make some of these calls, but you could be the best person to make the call of, well, let's see what else is out there and see if somebody knows how to do it better than we do. But with that being said, that's my macro tiff with how academies are ran. Now, again, the question was, what are we doing right? What are we doing wrong?
I'm going to start with wrong, because I think that's going to be a better angle to start with. Wrong, I think the training to minimum standards is a problem, right? Because you're training to a very low level. So I think we need to not focus on standards and focus more on the ability to accomplish tasks and accomplish tasks under pressure. And obviously there has to be a level of classroom and curriculum and all of that stuff, because you're learning laws, you're learning the legal system, you're learning the history of policing, because I do believe the history of policing is important, because we have to know where we came from to figure out moving forward. So there has to be that normal curriculum piece of the academy.
Well, before you progress forward, let's stop at curriculum. Let's start there. So curriculum.
Yeah.
Learning the law. I get it. You got to know some statutes in your state. Understood. Why do we bring people in who don't know the law to teach the law? And what I mean by that is, we're not tooting our own horns here at this company, but we're quite confident in our abilities to explain the Fourth Amendment. And Arizona follows Fourth Amendment flawlessly. They don't depart for police purposes. And yet I'll pose this question to many classes that I teach. And I said, who learned actual case law, which is the most important thing, or one of the most important things, one of the pillars of becoming a good cop, in their police academy? And literally, it is so few and far between, maybe less than 1% of people will raise their hands. And I'll say to them, why do you think you didn't learn such an important thing in your academy class? And usually I get the answer. Sometimes I get a few answers at first. One guy just yelled in the last class, this guy's going to laugh, listens to the podcast in Ohio, and insurance. I was like, do you have Tourette's? I just yell insurance, right? Like, he's like, no, it's true. And I'm like, no, it's not. That's not even in the realm of possibilities of why I don't teach case law. But, and usually the answer comes out is that nobody knows it. So when I look at something like that and I say, okay, a curriculum, people are romantic with this idea of having to have a live instructor in class in person, and maybe for banter back and forth and questions. But if you're posing questions to these quote unquote prosecutors, who literally have no idea. It's so funny. I have something really funny to tell you after this, but have no idea what they're talking about. What good are we doing? So I think in the curriculum sense, in order to fix this, it's going to have to be a pre-recorded, very high quality classroom presentation, because I'd rather sit in a class given by Zach Miller without him. He's our top case law guy, Explaining things to me in great detail, who has real good conceptions. And then we'll eventually volley and take in some of the questions we typically answered, and we'll try to continue to improve the program to make a better one. Then sitting in front of a guy going, this guy has no idea what he's talking about. What the fuck is he talking about? One thing I want to throw in there to further prove my point. I watched I was up late last night. I never am. Mine was racing. I have a lot of shit going on. And on Netflix, I started watching a documentary on the mob. So it's a three-part series, and I'm from New Jersey, and you know, believe it or not, Some of the people on that show are people that I have connections to. It's fucking very strange. And it's not me. It's not like some brag. It's they're criminals. And when they took down the Five Family Syndicate, Rudy Giuliani was the prosecutor. And they did this massive sweep of all these mafia bosses and dons. And the three prosecutors that they had assigned to this to take down these things were all like 29 years old, 28, 29 years old. And so I think the interviewer said to Rudy, why did they have 29-year-olds? And he said, we had nobody else. Everybody at the U.S. Attorney's Office is young because we don't pay anything. Now, none of those three men who prosecuted those mafia dons had remained at the U.S. Attorney's Office. They're all on private practice now.
Right.
So I think that really speaks volumes to what we get handed as legal professionals for us to rely on. And then we're expected to conform and abide by the law of which we have never been taught. So we need to start fixing how police officers behave in the field in realms of the Fourth Amendment. We probably should get them to start learning it from people who know it. So I'm going to say that. And that's that's curriculum. So and we'll take that and paint the broad brush. I think if you're going to have a guy teaching firearms, I think we should find the best firearm guys that we can, which typically I will give credit to the Catabies. Usually their firearms people are legit. That's usually, they usually get that one right. I will say that, especially on the level that they're at, that I'll give to them. But certainly I will argue that a lot of their defense tactics guys and girls are a fucking laughingstock. And I have no idea why they would even not even speak up when they're told they have to teach them how to swing a collapsible straight stick, whatever company makes that. Let's have the conversation. Let's toss these things out the fucking window and start getting to things that actually work. And the cool thing is now I'm seeing a lot of these academy instructors listening to what we're saying and implementing these things. So all this stuff and these suggestions, I'm not just holding to myself. I say them, obviously to my detriment, some are offended, but some go, you know what? That's actually pretty fucking good. We're going to start doing that. My best friend's a lieutenant at a big agency here. They recognize, now this guy's a thinker. He's retiring in 3 years. You can imagine where he's going to be working next. Right? My best friend, my daughter's godfather, I love him to death. And so what they did is they gave recruits radios day one. You get a radio. What they've recognized in the field is new cops are not hearing the radio.
Right.
So he said, what an opportunity. We have these guys for 5 or 6 months. Let's put radios on their shoulders and communicate through radio through their whole academy recruit time.
Yep.
I haven't seen, and dude, I'm so impressed because I didn't think of that. And it's so fucking smart. And I want to share that with people. And people say, well, we don't have the money for it. Well, fucking shit. You don't have the money for it. You can get clever and savvy and donations and fine. You don't need the fucking new radios. Maybe your communications divisions has the ones on the old systems that don't work anymore, and they're good enough to go back and forth. And if you don't have that kind of money, maybe make it an academy prerequisite. You got to buy a radio and an extender mic, and you can buy, because right, guys got to spend money on it. Hey, you'll need a radio for the academy. So put it on the recruit, $60-$70. Here's the radios we use. Here's the channels. Here's the mic that you need. This is what you'll be wearing in the academy. Rant over. Carry on.
So I don't disagree with you. And having run an academy, some of the stuff I implemented was just that, because what I the unique ability I had at that point, I was a sergeant. I was our training sergeant. I would work some patrol stuff, and I was a SWAT sergeant at the time. So I was still connected to the street, but I had been assigned to run the academy too. And so the unique perspective I had is I saw the finished product. And to your point, I was like, the finished product sucks, right? I'm getting dudes and I'm seeing deficiencies right off the bat. They're struggling on FTO because they haven't been exposed to certain things. And so to your point, like the radio usage, running license and being able to like field interview people and hold a conversation while they kept themselves safe. And so we would implement things like, hey, on break, you are going to write 5 citations using these fake IDs that we created. And we're going to have some of your RTOs and some of your training officers be your suspects. So you have to actually deal with a person. And so they're interacting with people like they will on the street for the whole academy. They're using radios like they have to use them on the street for the whole academy. And so they're getting used to that. So when they hit the street, it's just second nature because they've had that 4, 5, 6 months of repetition and getting used to it, wearing their body armor from the time they start the academy till they graduate so that they're used to it. And it's not a new thing that is cumbersome and all that kind of crap. And they figure out their equipment too. So you have them, we still have them start white shirts is what they call it. So they're like week 1, week 2, they're in white shirts, black pants, no uniforms, but then they graduate into uniforms and having to start wearing their gear, using their gear so that they have it all figured out, because you have all these grand ideas of where your equipment should be until you have to actually use it. And then it's like, well, shit, that didn't work there. And that didn't work there. And you know, you need to maneuver stuff around. And then knowing knowing, like to your point, case law, Fourth Amendment, some of the stuff we would have them do is on command, recite to me the Fourth Amendment, because I want you to know it inside and out. I don't want it just to be a document that you read and you know that that's kind of a guiding principle for cops. I want you to know it through and through so that you can recite it. And by the end of the academy, they know that by heart. They know the Fourth Amendment. So if they ever get questioned on, was it a Fourth Amendment violation? Do you know the Fourth Amendment? Yes, I know the Fourth Amendment, and blah, 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 blah. There it is. There's the Fourth Amendment because I've learned it by heart. So just little stuff like that we were doing that we felt was progressive. And then I would listen to my experts too, like to your point on firearms at a firearms cadre. And I think we do a good job of the firearms instructors are good at getting them through what they're supposed to get them through, which is, again, minimum standards, shooting at paper, and a little bit of judgmental, but that is not how a gunfight looks. And so I think we fail them in firearms and making it more of a combative, right? Combatives with firearms, because when you're in a fight and it turns into a gunfight, sometimes it goes straight to guns and that's just a gunfight. But a lot of times it works up to that, right? We're in a fight that then turns into a gunfight. So training them more in that realm so that they have, it's in their memory bank. They've been there and done that already. So the first time they get into a fight for their life and a struggle for their gun and they have to use their gun, it's not the first time they've seen it. They've been there and done that before and they know how to handle it and they know some good combatives to get them through. And the defensive tactics, just by name, dude, defensive is not really what we should be. We should be offensive because we know that that's what wins fights and it actually reduces injuries. So if we go hard and fast and get shit solved quickly, we are much less likely to get injured. It handles the problem quicker. And so I think that's where academies fail too, is with the whole DT stuff. They need to implement more real world tactics. They need to run more scenarios on a consistent basis. I think scenario based training, force on force training, that shit should be from day one, where they are introduced to it and they start experiencing some of the stuff that goes along with deadly force encounters and with use of force encounters. I think all of that, and the minimum standards is a fail because we shouldn't be training to minimum. I understand that each state and each, you know, whatever, ours is Arizona Post. You have to meet these minimum qualifications to become a cop and everything above that is good to go. But I think we need to just restructure how all of that looks so that we have a better end product that not only knows what they need to know, but they're able to do what they have to do to get the job done and survive and go home safe. Because that's one of our big things here is we want to return our people to their family and we would like to return them better than they came. So if we can better them and make them better for their family, that's a win for us. And so to do that, we have to equip them properly. And the academy is the place where it really all starts for any of the cops that are coming out.
This is not a profession where checking the box is okay, is what I'm hearing.
Right, right. Not if you want to be good and not if you want to live when you face the deadly force stuff. And in today's world, man, I mean, you know, back in the 90s when I first started, there were still violent encounters, but dude, compared to today, it's off the charts today. The people that just do not respect authority, that are willing to challenge authority and that are willing to use violence to do that is through the roof. And so we've got to rethink how we are training our people if we want them to survive these encounters and survive this career, because it not only can they physically be hurt, but mentally be hurt if they're not prepared for this. And I think, again, that's where the academy fails because they train you, but they don't necessarily prepare you. And if you're trained and prepared, then I think you fare much better all the way around.
Unfortunately, I'm going to have to stop this podcast, but with the invitation to come back and do it again for a few reasons. Number one, we're a little late to this, so we have another one coming up in about 20 minutes here. People realize they like the Street Cop Training podcast because I fucking record a bunch of these motherfuckers a week. So I have one or two. I haven't eaten since last night at 7 o'clock and it's 1:40 here. Yeah. Dude. So I employ a fast, but sometimes it kind of bites me in the butt because if I have other things that come up on the itinerary, that gets pushed. I'm feeling like I really need to eat. Number two.
All good, man. All good.
And number three is I probably have about 17 more things on my list that I want to talk about with you. And I think people want to hear more from you because it's a really good podcast. And I'm glad that it went that way. And I might have to say that it might be better than Mark's. So you let him know that. Yeah. So that's right two on. That he missed. He missed two there. But we got to get Lamb back on this shit. Maybe the next time he can come on as well and chime in on some of this stuff.
Yeah.
Sure. But we'll kind of piece it together that way. And I'm hopefully you'll make it out to Nashville. But if not, I'm sure I'll see you in the future. But we'll have the podcast producer Frankie reach out and we'll get this all squared away. And looking forward to seeing Mark in about 3 weeks. Very excited for that. Yep. And dude, great stuff today. And I think that you're an example for a lot of people who are listening. And often it's not the people who need to be listening that are listening, but they don't realize it. It actually is the people that need to be listening that are listening. And it is the future of law enforcement. Kid today said, my admin needs to see this stuff. And I said, I understand, but your admin is seeing it. You're just not there yet.
Right.
So as the ratchet continues to turn, you will eventually find yourself climbing ranks and now understanding what the importance of this profession is and how to fix and change it and understanding the behavior and the thought behind if we'd like to get things better, we got to make better things. And that's people and products and services. And unfortunately, police training has to be and police work has to be treated as a business in some sense where we've got to take the smartest people, the ones who can help the most, and put them in the places where they need to be to help push the progression forward.
Yep, absolutely.
Well, dude, it was great seeing you again, and we'll put this together with Frankie.
Right on.
Guys, if you're in an area where you're trying to get to our classes, but we're not close to you, fret not. We actually have on-demand training at streetcop.com. You can take that course online right now, and then you could attend that training in the future at no additional cost. You can redeem your voucher. So you get two for the price of one. We don't want to deny you the ability to take this training now, especially knowing that it can keep you safe at a very minimum, putting bad guys in jail where they belong, and at the maximum, going home to your family. Check out streetcop.com for that offer.